Hello, friends, and welcome to the show. You know, as we start getting through the year 2020, we also have to start thinking about how this year is going to end. Now, it hasn't started very well for businesses, for organizations. It's very hard to even imagine what life's going to be like when we kind of figure out a way to get back to some sort of a normal existence. Well, as a business person, as an HR professional, these are some things you ought to be thinking about. How are we going to do differently what we didn't do before? How are we going to make the most of this opportunity? How are we going to adapt better? And more importantly, how are we going to improve things because of the new opportunities we will now have to do that? My guest today is Tara Rathore. Now, I had Tara on the show about a year ago, and we talked about what happens in the boardroom. So what Tara does is she works with executive groups and helps them think through how to solve problems. I got to sit down with her to talk about what, in her opinion, was important to consider as we move toward reopening business, reopening society. It was a lot of fun to chat with her. She has some great suggestions, so make sure you take good notes for this one. If you are in the HR professional field, if you are an executive, there's some good stuff in here for you. So let's go ahead and get busy with our conversation. You know what time it is. Let's get that personal item tucked under the seat in front of you. It's time to buckle up and take off.
Should the cabin lose pressure, oxygen masks will drop from the overhead area. Please place the mask over your own mouth and nose before assisting others.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of the HR Oxygen Podcast, the show focused on the overworked, overwhelmed, and underappreciated HR professional. And now, here is the host of our show, the Boss Builder, Mac Monroe.
Let's think about, so we'll timestamp it today. Today is June the 8th, right?
Yes, it is.
And so we are, so I heard today that New Zealand has considered itself COVID-free. They're going back to normal way of life as of today. Now, I don't think that's going to be our experience here in the United States or anywhere else. I think New Zealand can do it because they're an island and they basically have shut off from the rest of the world. So until somebody flies in there and infects the community, that's probably as safe as it's going to be. I don't think that's going to be what we experience here in the U.S. So as we transition back into something, and I hate the word new normal because it's one of those buzzwords everybody uses. You know that word, right? New normal.
I do. And in
the
fact,
new normal.
Yeah,
the new normal.
I would argue there's no such thing as a new normal.
I don't think anything's normal. So,
well, there's that, but I actually do think this is normal in the sense that disruption, how you manage your business, uncertainty, all of that is totally normal in business. Now, the nature of this may have caught people unaware, may be different than they've experienced before, but the idea of us living in or not having had the experience of a major disruption is not, in my view, really true. We all encounter uncertainty and disruption. And I think, quite honestly, Mac, I think that's can be comforting and helpful for people to be reframing their thinking in that way, because if we think of it as it's a very overwhelming situation. And when you think about it as like, oh my God, it's a whole new normal. We're redefining everything. Holy cow. That is very overwhelming. That is very challenging. But if you reframe that mindset, even just a little bit to say, well, this is a new disruption. I haven't seen this before, but I have dealt with, I've managed my company, my business, my family. We have managed through uncertainty. We've navigated through it. We've managed disruptions before, or others have. So we have lessons that we can learn from them about how do we take this forward? What do we need to be thinking about? And what does that look like? There are lessons that we can learn. And I think that then becomes freeing and refreshing because it gives us a place to start, a way to kind of take us forward. Otherwise, it's very easy to get paralyzed, in my opinion.
Well, I think you're right. Maybe the biggest challenge is that it's happened a lot of different things all at once. And, you know, where you have a, you know, manual of standard operating procedures, like what do we do if this happens? There really isn't one for any of these things. And I think what's been really neat that I've seen about it is that it has forced people to really take seriously, you know, the workplace as we knew it, which I don't think was really all that healthy, and to make it to something that I think is in the long run is going to be probably one of the best things that we can do for a talent management place, for quality of life, for, you know, I mean, where you live, if you could eliminate a commute, that would be probably a game changer there.
For lots and of reasons, yes.
Yeah. I mean, when I lived there for all those years, it's like, God, that is the worst thing about living here is getting on that stupid metro and being jammed in there or stuck on I-270 trying to get down there. And if you just took away that annoyance, quality of life would go up substantially. So
and
in that,
quality of the
in
planet
that respect,
and,
it's good.
You know, other things as well.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Yeah.
In fact, I was talking to somebody the other day and they says, yeah, all the birds are going crazy. It's like they're fighting with each other. And I thought, well, it's because there was a Nat Geo show called Life Without Humans or Discovery Channel, one of those. And, you know, nature kind of goes crazy without human intervention. So we've seen a little bit of that. But
yeah, we have literally seen that, by the way. And I wish I could quote where that was, but there have actually been some studies that talk about seismic activity. Also, like if you have seismographs and such, and I actually did this in the energy sector, if you're exploring for oil or gas deposits, you know, you send through a seismic shock and you can measure the waves and see if there's a deposit somewhere, right? Well, when you do that, you can literally hear people, cows, whomever, walking on the earth. Well, apparently they've used a similar type of study and they've looked at the noise in the earth, or I should say the lack thereof. During this crisis, they can actually see the difference in sort of the noise level felt and heard by the earth versus, you know, through those vibrations versus what it is now or what it's been during the shutdown. So there, you really can see how we've had that impact. The shutdown has had an impact on the noise, the volume, the chaos that the earth feels or absorbs through vibrations. So it's fascinating. I mean, you really can literally look at it scientifically and listen to it and see it through the wave patterns. Fascinating.
I guess I never really even thought about that. But I think what that is going to do is make businesses have to kind of rethink everything. And I mean, I think it's good. For me, it's basically going to probably change the way I do business. I probably won't be flying anymore. I might be driving if I go long places, but this has sort of cleansed everybody. It's almost like for a lot of us, we're going to start from scratch. And so, you know, from what your role is working with, you know, C-suites and executives, how do you see this playing out? Do you think people are thinking about it right now? Do they have any plans? What would you suggest for decision makers to start considering?
Well, I think one of the things we have to do is, and if we take that little noise analogy a little bit further, is one of the things they need to be thinking about is where's the noise in their business or where has it been? So the absence of noise now versus big noise earlier. And what do I mean by that? Well, you can talk about it as cracks in your foundation. You can talk about it as disruptions in your processes, technology, your connections and relationships with people. Where are the places where you're running into or you have found that it wasn't working for you? It was getting in your way. When you're in the middle of a crisis, that's the time when you can see what's not working for you. And equally, wow, what's worked really well? Where are the areas where you've been really nimble? You've been able to quickly regroup. And then what are the parts of your business that are most vulnerable as a result of what's going on? So it really provides, kind of raises a flag for you to see, where do I need to place my attention? You asked me also, are they making plans? Are they doing that? Some are, some aren't. And so what I'm doing with them, with a lot of them, is kind of working with them to create some pictures of their business environment going forward. We don't know what that looks like necessarily. There's a huge amount of uncertainty and there will remain a great deal of uncertainty going forward. So what are the things that are most likely to impact or even have the most significant impact on your ability to operate, to serve customers, to connect your people? And in many cases, for this specific instance, to keep your people and your customers safe, because people are not going to want to go back to work, no matter how you decide to do that, whether it's in the office, at home, getting on a train, whatever it is, right? They're not going to want to do that or come visit you in a shop if they feel unsafe. So they got to figure that part out too. And that's probably a new question to ask in some respects outside of manufacturing and other kinds of industries like that. I don't think we hear as much of a conversation around what keeps my staff safe. It's universal right now. You've got to stay safe. So I think that's a piece of it, is like stepping it through. Where am I most vulnerable? Where are the places that I've done extremely well? And then how deep or broad is that impact? Because that starts you thinking along, where do I spend my time and effort and money? What do I fix first? Well, the things that are the most impactful for your business are the ones you want to tackle first. And those are that's the hard part, right? That's the shift my business model, shift my operations versus the forward-looking proactive piece, which is, if I can fix some of these things, or if I can look at some of these things, where are the opportunities? And I think we can be creating pictures of that as well. So on the one hand, you're looking at, will my staff return to work in an office or not? And then, kind of in what ways will they be working? That same logic applies to your customers or to your industry. You know, how might my staff help my customer staff? Or what tools and techniques do we have that my customers might be able to take so that they begin improving, that we can help them to start improving?
Do you think that any of your clients, I guess I can't say your clients, but let's just say business owners, executives in general, do you think any of them had a strategic plan that actually was useful when this all went down?
Sure. It goes back to some of our earlier conversations, Mac. What is strategy? Strategy is the set of decisions and actions that will get you where you want to go. They get you to your destination. That's your vision, right? A plan that sits on a shelf probably wasn't the right thing, or in the cloud or something, right? Probably not so helpful, right? If they're truly using their strategic thinking, their strategic planning exercises as living, breathing tools to take the business forward, they're more able to make quick adjustments, to tweak it, because they're already in the habit of doing that. And I do have clients that are already saying, you know what, we're pivoting. We have this piece that we were going to go forward with and we're going to take it forward. I've also had some say, you know, we pushed this to the side and now we're bringing this forward. We need to do that now. We always, really concrete example, right? A statement from one of my clients, we always thought about taking our work online. We did it yesterday. Okay. What does that mean for my customers? My customers now are able to train their people with that. What we've put together, we put it online. We're not doing it in person. They're now able to train their people more easily. Gosh, that just opened up doors for me in training folks who are usually like frontline folks that are on help desks. You can't pull them out so easily. It's very expensive to pull them off the line, whatever the customer service line that you're on or the help desk line that you're on, because they're actively engaged with customers all the time, right? So being able to do, so you don't want to send them off to a week of training, as just an example. Being able to have them working more effectively online means that they can do some of that work. So it just created some opportunities for them. They're like, okay, let's accelerate that. I know others that said we needed, look at higher ed. Higher ed has been challenged with shifting their business model for years. They still have work to do and they still are going to need to rethink it. They were fastest among all of our educational systems, in my opinion, in taking their coursework and moving it online. And even studio work, labs, those kinds of things that are, you know, performance art, visual studies, those kinds of programs that are normally very hands-on in a room, you know, you need certain equipment. They figured out how to put at least part of it, like how to make that work in an online environment. Now, it's not the same, but it was effective. And so they furthered their whole thinking about how do you really create compelling learning online without losing all of the experience of interacting with those professors? Because that's been the big question for higher ed, is like the college experience is different if you do it online versus doing it in person. It is different. So how do we capture that?
Yeah, well, I think that's just going to make people have to look at it differently. You know, I can remember when you had like University of Phoenix and Strayer and places like that, where, you know, that degree would not look as good as someone who did the traditional. And, you know, that way of thinking is probably going to shift eventually as well.
Yeah, I think a lot of that has already happened. I think there's some other, like American Public University has done some great work on that. I think there are some schools that have done some really great work on that. I think those examples are the for-profit versus the nonprofit ethos. Because I think it can be mission-driven irrespective of what your legal status is. You don't have to be a 501c3, for example, to be a mission-driven organization. You could be for-profit. But I think the underlying ethos behind it and what are we in the business of doing, what's our purpose, our core purpose, is very different. And what I think it's showing is that what higher ed is also rapidly discovering as they're looking at next fall, which is another industry that is, you know, again, you asked, what are they doing to look forward? Well, higher ed has to figure that out fast because their whole revenue model depends on the incoming students for next fall. And incoming students are looking at it going, I don't know if I want to pay for an on-campus experience when I'm not going to be on campus. So they've got to really think fast. And what they're looking at is, how do we recreate, how do we blend this? How do we capture the experience of college life, because there is value in that experience, and keep people safe and deliver things more effectively online? And they have to, and they're modeling it. And you can see how they're modeling it and how that's playing out. And I mention it because it's so public right now. If you go online and just check out a few key universities, even if you just stick with your local state, you know, your state schools alone will tell you a variety of models that people are applying and thinking about applying different futures or different scenarios to what is essentially the same business going forward. And that gives you a sense of what are the options, or at least a way of thinking about options. Because that's what, I mean, it's scenario thinking, right? It's figuring out what different ways this could play out and how might your decisions or your options contribute to that or work under each of those scenarios.
Well, we're dealing with something that we've never dealt with before, and I don't even think we've fully defined what COVID-19 is, because, you know, right now we're still in the throes of it. So will there be a world where we eventually go back to nobody wears masks anymore, as if it never happened, or is this going to be a kind of a preview of what life will be like? And since we don't know, I mean, how long do you suspect that this kind of weird planning is going to happen, right? Because I'm thinking, you know, my daughter's a rising senior in college, and she says, you know, they're going to open the campus, but they're going to eliminate fall break, mm-hmm. and they're going to eliminate like the Labor Day weekend and all these things. And right after Thanksgiving, that's the end of the term.
Right.
So, I mean, it's like we're sort of winging it right now till we figure out what's going to happen. But if, let's just pretend that we discover a year from now that this is gone, it's never going to happen again, do you think we're going to go back to what we used to do, or will there be some kind of a blended approach? I mean, I'm asking you to look into your crystal ball. I'm looking at mine, but it's black. I don't see nothing.
Yeah, I was just thinking there's a lot of fog in that crystal ball. I mean, if I had the real answer, like the definitive answer to that, frankly, Mac, I'd be rich, right? Because everybody would want to talk to me. I'm not sure it matters. I don't think we need to answer that question. The questions we need to answer are, how are we going to navigate forward, and how are we going to create an environment in which we can move far more seamlessly and effortlessly than we have done in and out of an environment where we have extremes. And I think the second piece of that, because I think COVID's going to be with us for a little bit, and if it's not COVID-19, it's going to be COVID-20. It's going to be COVID-21, or it's going to be some other thing that we have yet to name. So as a CEO, as a business leader, I'm advising them not to worry about what the future, like defining the future. I'm suggesting instead that they look at how do you create that nimble, agile organization, those structures that you can adapt quickly in order to switch gears back and forth. So toggle on and off between lockdown, not lockdown, because it's going to be, I think, something that we're going to be facing for quite a while. I don't know what the magic number is, but the science and the stats say it's not, you know, like waiting for a vaccine is crazy because our track record of getting there that fast, we'd be out, everybody'd be out of the business and, or losing our minds because we're still in lockdown or any number of other really nasty scenarios. If we wait that long, I mean, the fastest we found a vaccine was mumps in the 50s. And we knew a heck of a lot about that virus. And AIDS, which is much more recent, we still don't have a cure for. We still don't have a vaccine for that. But we've learned to live with it. So how do you create an environment in which you can keep your people safe? You can maintain your business. You're not, you know, your business doesn't crater every time we go into a surge of this. And yet we're still continuing to move forward and protecting it. So how do you, each time you then learn from, okay, so this time it looks like this, we're learning from it. We need to keep going. Palladena Health did a really nice webinar on preparing for a return to work. And one of the key takeaways I had from their experts was the idea, and they had medical experts on there as well as kind of futurists. And the takeaway for me was that this is very individual. There's no single answer. And I think that's something that we really have to think about. So the society is going to be doing some things and we've shut things down globally. But what we've also learned is that the situation is very different depending on where you are and where you live and what your organization looks like. So as you're preparing for work, it really is an organization by organization decision and plan. And it could even be site by site or business line by business line. I have a client that has both traditional headquarters staff workers, you know, blue collar, very traditional office staff. And they also have facilities where they make stuff. And they have parts of their business where their staff goes out to other facilities and does work for them. So they've got to figure out how to protect all of those folks. And also make sure that they're not infecting the rest of the company or the rest of their families or their communities and spreading the virus. That's a different solution for each scenario, each circumstance. There is not a single company-wide, we're going to do this. It doesn't work. So I think it's just, I don't know when we're going to come out of it, but I don't see it being soon. And even if it were, I don't think it's the right question to ask or figure out the answer to. I think you could spend a long time thinking about that and not get anywhere.
Well, you know, what I remember, because you mentioned AIDS and that had me thinking too. So it started rearing its head. It was the mid 80s because I was in the Navy and I was in healthcare. So, you know, we started to hear about rumors. We had a guy, I was stationed overseas and I remember cleaning his teeth. I was a dental tech and this guy was a bleeder, man. I had blood everywhere underneath my fingernails, and he got real sick and they sent him to Hawaii. And then we heard a year later that he had died of AIDS. So immediately I'm thinking, oh my God, we didn't wear gloves back in those days, nothing. And so what I remember is the panic, right? Like you can get it off toilet seats. And and then I remember when I got stationed in Long Beach, we started getting HIV tested every year. Anybody that came up HIV positive, you took their dental record and put it in a separate drawer. So we had, I don't know, six or seven of them. And I remember, you know, when they would come in for treatment, you basically quarantine the entire operatory. You cover everything in plastic and double gloves, shoe covers, you know, surgical gowns, all this stuff. And I remember handing the record to the tech and she didn't want to touch the record. I said, come on, it's just a guy's record, you know? But I think what happened is that we finally figured out, we got our arms around it, which I don't think we have with COVID. We don't have our arms around it yet. Once you do, then, you know, and I remember dentists complaining, I'm not going to do dentistry with gloves. I ruined my tactile sense. And I thought, boy, now if you were to go to a dentist's office you know, if you didn't wear gloves, you'd feel really weird. It took a while to get there. But once we got our arms around it, healthcare shifted, but it didn't change drastically. And I think the same will happen with COVID. So I guess I'm just kind of thinking out loud that you mentioned it. I mean, that was a big deal. It really impacted healthcare, where obviously this one does too, but I mean, the general public too.
Yeah. And I think the business of healthcare may shift. I hope it does. I hope, because there have been, you know, that's another, back to what you said before, where the cracks in the foundation, right? You know, as we were talking about, it's like, I think that's an industry where we can see the cracks in our foundation. And I think we can see, for example, when you have a crisis like this, and you have a country as big and as diverse as ours, like geographically dispersed, it's really helpful to have a national distribution system or a way of immediately, rapidly connecting with a variety of providers and facilities and resources and manufacturing and distributor, all the different pieces of that system, and deploying the resources you need to the places you need them when you need that. The fact that we have a more fractured or dispersed healthcare system made that response that much harder. Whereas you look at Korea, South Korea, one of the things that they were able to do is, you know, granted they're smaller too, their geographic footprint is way smaller, but they were able to deploy things much more quickly because they had that centralized network. And it's a great way of taking some lessons from that. Does that mean we have to go all the way to national health? I don't know. But it does mean that we need a mechanism through which we can rapidly coordinate across the various systems. So I do think there's an opportunity for us to see. I think there's an opportunity for somebody who figures that out. I would be, in many respects, I think it's a great role of government. It's where the federal government should be there. Like, when you want a strong government is when you have a crisis like this. But whether it has to be the solution, maybe not. It could be a private sector solution. Either way, there's an opportunity. There's an opportunity for somebody to come in and figure that out fast and create a new space and fundamentally shift the structure and the business of that industry. And telehealth too, you know?
Really
comfortable with that.
Yeah, I think that's when you don't have a choice, then very quickly you look forward to it. And then you think, gee, this could work all the time. And it just so happens that, you know, 5G is something that's coming online. I heard with 5G, you could literally operate on somebody across the country with one of those surgical things where you control the little knives or whatever. Mm-hmm. And it's in such real time, there's no lag. So and the technology will be there.
They're deploying some of that kind of technology in, I believe it's in one of the New York hospitals that we're talking about. So they're trying to minimize how many people go into a room of someone who's been quarantined for COVID-19. Makes perfect sense, right? So when a charge nurse or somebody who's been caring for the patient feels that a consult is needed, they have interesting new technology, two-way cameras that allow the doctor to work directly with the nurse who's already been in that room and in and out of that room and interfacing with that patient to lay hands on the patient to get the data that they need as a doctor to, you know, to weigh in and to make some decisions without literally showing up in the room. And what that does for you is not only help that one patient, but it also means that they're not carrying anything else to other patients as a result of visiting them. So they can concentrate their staff in a much better way. And they're using, it's exactly that. It's very much like, how do you make it possible for people to connect without physically being there? And we have the technology. I think that's a hopeful piece of this, by the way.
Well, it does. It's going to increase the capacity of care for sure. So
capacity of care and potentially the quality of care, and also help us all as individuals to think more carefully about how we, I think you can get greater equity of access this way as well. I mean, think of your rural populations. That's a huge issue, getting doctors to go to rural locations, getting the hospitals to be able to survive financially. If you can do some more of this and call in other types of specialists to help in a different way, you can really improve the equity of access to healthcare.
Well, I mean, you could almost look at it too with, you know, the way things are now with people more virtual, you could expand your talent search. You know, you could get hired to work in Silicon Valley, but, you know, you could live in Van Leer, Tennessee, where the quality of life is better and the cost of living is way lower. So,
agreed. I do think from an HR perspective, from a people perspective, lots of great opportunities there. Roberta Madison published a piece around how do you hire someone, not virtually, but hire someone using remote technologies, like without having them in the office. And then the flip side of that for an individual considering a job is, how do you know if the fit's right if you haven't laid eyes on, literally beyond, you know, this two-dimensional screen, haven't gotten that sort of taking the pulse of your potential new colleagues and workplace? You know, you're only seeing through the tunnel. And really quite, I think there's a huge opportunity for talent development, for matching skills in one location to where the jobs are. I think it's much broader than just, oh, well, if you're in a job that you're answering phones all the time, you know, help desks, customer service, those kinds of things, who cares where you sit? That's the only place where we don't care where you sit, right? Mm-hmm. Well, maybe that's not true. Maybe you can do that in all kinds of places, and we can get much, much better about that.
Well, if you can figure out a way to make the DMV virtual, man, that's a game changer right there.
Yeah, it would have been very, my son's of near driving age, and he turned 15 and a half right after the shutdown, like days after it shut down in the Commonwealth. And, you know, so now he's sitting there waiting for the DMV to open so that he can get his learner's permit. So I think he'd be right there with you, Mac. It would be all about a solution to that.
Well, it's a rite of passage. You have to suffer so that you can appreciate. I told my son, I said, you better pass his driving test the first time, because I'm not coming back here to sit. We went to the Frederick, Maryland DMV, and that was a nightmare. And that was better than Gaithersburg. So, I mean, I think when we first moved, we went up to Hagerstown. And people said, well, even Hagerstown's getting crowded, so you got to go all the way up to, you know, before you know it, you're going to go to the far corner of the state. But so, well, let me ask you just one more question here. Let's kind of wind this down. So when an organization's leaders are going to start meeting now, when they do their strategy and they start thinking about it, how do you bring somebody in who can help them process stuff you never thought would happen? I mean, because I think every organization has the person with a bad attitude that's, you know, woe is me, this is like the sky is falling, everything's going to be bad. Seems to me that's the person you need to bring in there, because every possible thing they can think is going to go wrong, they'll talk about it, and probably things you hadn't thought about. Would that be a useful person to bring, or how can we do this without bringing somebody like that in? Because who could have come up with this? I would put money on it that nobody January 1st said this is the year of a pandemic, because the biggest problem we had was, do you write 2020 on the check or just 20? And then lo and behold, a few weeks later, then the sky is suddenly falling. Nobody could have predicted that.
Well, that's another conversation, whether or not we could have predicted it. However, I think what you're really asking is, if you're trying to consider alternate futures, who are the types of folks you want to have in the room? And I think the short answer is, you want to have as diverse opinion and ways of thinking as you can. And so if you have the glass half empty guys and the glass half full folks, you also should have your dreamers and so those are the people who just can think like the most bizarre thoughts, and you think, I have no idea where that came from. We all know them, you know, and they're awesome in this room. But I think when you're doing scenario thinking, you still need to, it's fun to dream, it's fun to brainstorm, it's fun for all the blue eyes, you know, blue ocean and blue sky thinking, all of that. You still need a little structure. And scenario thinking involves really thinking about, what are the key drivers of change in your industry? And your industry may be a little bit different, but in your world, right? What are the key drivers? What are the possible alternatives, the extremes that could happen? And start playing with, literally, like if you laid them out on a continuum, kind of say, well, if everything was all bad, so you could have the sky fell, forget sky is falling Chicken Little, just the sky fell, like all hell broke loose scenario. And you could have, or the perfect storm or any other lovely analogy, you could have at the other end, the grass is green, you know, everything is rosy, the Pollyanna, whatever you want to call the extremes, those are two. There's a whole host of things in the middle of those two extremes that are more likely to happen. And those are the ones that you want to tweak and get the nuances of what that looks like, and then tell a story. And that's where each of those types of folks that are in the room can really help you to tell the story. You can use your pessimists or your folks who are really good at seeing the worst that can happen to consider what's the worst that can happen. Like, ask that question and then say, okay, so if that happens, what would we do? And then you start creating alternatives just for that. You say, okay, so if all of that happens, if all hell breaks loose, these are our options for our path forward. Which of these do we think we most would be able to do? What would it take? On the flip side is, what's the best that can happen? You know, the stars align, we've got this going. And then you say with your pessimist, now tell me, in this aligning stars scenario, where are the cracks? And you say to your pessimist, what would it take? Or you say to your optimist, what would it take to reframe the pessimistic view, the all hell broke loose view, and to create something great out of that? Where are the opportunities in that? And you flip it. And that's how you can use them to really have a creative conversation about what it would look like, and then create those stories and then say, okay, in this story, and your stories that you ultimately will plan against may not be the all hell breaks loose versus the Pollyanna or the stars are aligned kind of view, because they're so extreme that it's either of those two is unlikely, but maybe they are. What you're planning against is, which of our options, which of our priorities, which of our strategies, which of our approaches fare best under all of those scenarios. So if I test this against my worst case or my best case or my middle cases, which of these fares best? And that becomes the one where you say, okay, let's go for that one right now. And meanwhile, let's identify the risks, or let's talk about, plan for, think about the risks that we identified in some of the other scenarios, and A, monitor them so that you're keeping an eye out for them, and B, think about and instill some basic mitigation steps. So if this, then that. You know, if this happens, then we do this. And how might you mitigate? And I think from a talent perspective, from an HR perspective as well, that becomes a really important place where they can join, because a lot of it has to do with how your people respond, how you communicate, how you react or control your emotions and your own behaviors, live your values. And HR always has an important role to play in helping the organization to live true to their values, because you always want to align your actions to your values, in my opinion.
Well, this is the kind of work that you do, right, Tara?
Yes. Okay. Thinking specifically about that big picture and then figuring out on the ground, how are you really going to get it done? How are we going to put things in place to take things forward, regardless of the path that we choose?
All right. So with that said, I hope that we have made the case that this is what you ought to be doing, and you probably need to connect with someone that can help you through that process, which I think you've done that for us, Tara. So how would our listeners reach you? How can they reach out to you and say, help us figure this out, because we really need to get it done and we want to make sure it gets done right? How do we find you?
You know, you can always have a conversation with me by finding me through the strategyforreal.com. That's our website. Subscribe to the blog. Find me on LinkedIn, and then it's either under the company name or under mine. And just reach out and talk to me. If you have a strategic question, if you have that thing you just can't put your finger on, let's talk. Let's figure it out. Let's structure the problem and figure out how to take it forward.
Excellent. Well, Tara, thank you so much for coming on the show again. We had you on, I guess, about a year ago, and it's good to have you back.
Great to be back.
We couldn't have predicted a year ago you'd be back on the show with this, but I guess the best thing we can do is just expect the unexpected. So thanks again. And if you're listening to this now, please reach out to Tara.
Thanks so much, Mac. Appreciate it.
Thanks for tuning in to another episode of the HR Oxygen Podcast. We hope you found something today that will relieve your stress, feed your soul, and pump you up to face another day. At Boss Builders, we want to let you know that we appreciate the hard work you do every day as an HR professional. And as a reminder, always make sure to adjust your own oxygen mask before attempting to help those around you. Be well.